Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kean. Today, we'll discuss the article by Beaumont et al. Titled, Vagus Nerve Stimulation Mitigates Intrinsic Cardiac Neuronal and Adverse Myocyte Remodeling Post-Myocardial Infarction. This article published online August 14, 2015. Joining me today are Editor-in-Chief Irv Zucker, Lead Author Jeffrey Ardell, and Content Expert David Mendelowitz. Let's get started.
Thank you, Kara. The neural control of myocardial function is very complex. In fact, more complex than we appreciated 40 or 50 years ago. For many years, it was thought that the balance between sympathetic and vagal outflow to the SA node and to the myocardium was the sole way the autonomic nervous system modulated the heart. Afferent signaling was thought to be primarily to inform the central nervous system about rate, force, and ischemic events in some cases. However, the past 20 years or so, studies by Jeff Ardell and Drew Armour and Bob Foreman and several others have clearly shown that the intrinsic cardiac nervous system is dominated by intracardiac ganglia that both send and receive information from the heart. Because vagal nerve stimulation is now becoming a therapy for a variety of conditions, the studies reported here are critical to our further understanding of the role of these intracardiac ganglia. So, Jeff, can you outline what the rationale was for the study and a little bit about the methodology and then what the main findings are?
I'd be glad to, Irv. First of all, the major premise here is that myocardial ischemia actually remodels both the myocytes and the nervous system that regulates it. The main gist of that is it's a result of altered afferent activity. You get increases in sympathetic activity, decreases in central parasympathetic drive, and the net effect of this is you get the progression of the pathology. The rationale here was we were going to use vagal nerve stimulation to restore that central vagal drive. The major findings of this were that we altered both the soma and the synaptic efficacy with the intrinsic cardiac nervous system. We reduced anti-adrenergic influences at both the ganglia and the peripheral end effectors. We rendered myocytes stress resistant, and we changed metabolic function within the myocytes. The sum total of this is that VNS was actually able to help sustain contractile function in the case of chronic ischemia.
Thank you, Jeff. David, maybe you can provide some insight and comments onto some of the pathways which might be operative here, both at the ganglion level and at the effector organ in terms of vagal stimulation.
Thanks, Irv. That's a very interesting question. As you know, there's lots of different types of fibers in the vagus nerve, lots of different sensory or afferent nerves, and lots of different motor or efferent components within the vagus nerve. And in some ways, vagal nerve stimulation is still at its infancy, meaning that we know that it can be very effective, and there's lots of very promising clinical data. But at the same time, there's lots that we don't know that are impeding our further progression in the field and making this more clinically relevant.
Right. I wonder, Jeff, if you could comment on what you believe is happening at the ganglion level as you modulate the vagal input to the ganglion. And clearly, you've shown in this paper that there are adaptive responses and remodeling responses. But I was curious on how the input to the ganglia might have modulated myocyte function and some of the actual anti-apoptotic effects that you may have found.
That's a very good point, Irv. As you correctly point out, the intrinsic cardiac nervous system is a very complex structure. It receives inputs from the sympathetic and parasympathetic system. It also receives feedback from afferents in the myocardial infarction zone and surrounding areas. We've demonstrated previously that that neural signature from the afferents is altered. It goes back to the intrinsic cardiac nervous system, and the net effect of that is that as a result of the decreased parasympathetic tone, increased sympathetic tone, and altered sensory input, you actually get a remodeling in that nervous system as it tries to maintain function. What we find with the vagal stimulation is we actually come down and we restore the balance of that system back towards control. We do such things as reduce synaptic efficacy, which could reduce the potential for hyperexcitability of reflexes within the system. And we also alter the adrenergic and cholinergic inputs going to the end effectors. The net effect of those is that we actually have direct influences on the myocytes. The reduced potential for apoptosis you mentioned could be a function of the release of catecholamines and how we modify that with the vagal stimulation.
Right. That was really one of the most interesting parts of this study. David, you've had a lot of experience studying everything that the vagus does. Clearly, vagal nerve stimulation activates, at least at various frequencies, both afferent and efferent fibers. Could you give us some, you know, insight on what the beneficial or the negative effects would be on both sides? Because obviously, some of these afferents are sympathoinhibitory. There may be some that are actually sympathoexcitatory.
That's a very interesting question, Irv. As you know, there's lots of different sensory afferent components in the vagus nerve, and stimulating some of them can be very beneficial, but stimulating others may not be as welcome. For example, we may appreciate a feeling of fullness if we're attempting to lose weight, but at the same time, we may get a sense of nausea, and obviously that's not a sensation that one would want upon vagal nerve stimulation. And the same is true when you look on the efferent or the motor components of vagal nerve stimulation. Obviously, there's some very good work that shows, and including in this study by Jeff, that it could be very beneficial for controlling cardiac function and diseases like heart failure and arrhythmias. But it also may change the gastrointestinal function in unintended and perhaps unfavorable ways.
Jeff, any comments regarding that component?
Now, David is exactly right. I mean, how you stimulate the vagus actually is a very critical component of what you get. As David points out, and you've pointed out, you get both afferents and efferents. Our work has demonstrated that we have ongoing that actually the afferents are engaged before the efferents. This actually has important implications in treating epilepsy and depression. The efferent components are obviously very cardiac related. As David points out, there's actually also adverse effects associated with the vagal stimulation, and this actually has limited some of the clinical trials. We've done additional work which was indicated that we can actually train the vagus with certain types of stimulation so that those adverse effects are mitigated, specifically the problems with coughing, with nausea, so on and so forth. But once again, the critical point is you need to understand how you're stimulating, and those components are going to determine exactly what kind of responses you're going to get at both the GI level, at the cardiac level, and in higher centers.
Thanks, Jeff. One of the things that was very interesting to me in this study, I think, was shown in figure 3, where you showed that the output frequency didn't really change between the control group and the MI animals, but with vagal stimulation, the output frequency was quite reduced. So what does that say about myocardial infarction per se on the output of these ganglia?
First of all, I'd like to point out that the type of pathology has a big influence in terms of the synaptic efficacy within the intrinsic cardiac nervous system. If you do one of our other models, which is pressure overload, that synaptic following frequency can increase up to close to 25 hertz. By the same token, if you look at myocardial infarction, you look very early on after the process, for example, at 4 to 6 days, you get the same increase in synaptic efficacy. So there is actually a progression in the synaptic efficacy which goes on with time. And it's also pathological dependent. The main point with the vagal stimulation, of regardless of the pathology, we still reduce that synaptic efficacy. And for me, the major importance of that is that we actually reduce and put a governor on the overall network processing and reduce the potential for hyperexcitability of any of the reflexes that could be induced by the pathological condition.
Right. I think that's a very important observation and may be very critical for understanding the mechanism of vagal stimulation. David, would you like to finish up with anything that you want to leave us with?
Jeff, so a lot of the mechanisms that you think are going on at the cardiac level, do you think they may also play a role in vagal nerve stimulation benefits to epilepsy and depression?
That is also a very good question, and actually that's right on target. If you follow the literature much with the vagal stimulation, you'll see that there has been efficacy against both depression and epilepsy, but that it's been a mixed bag. It's not as clear as it's been shown within, for example, the reduced ejection heart failure, which the current clinical studies are evaluating. I think the thing that needs to be understood in that realm, once again, is how you stimulate the afferents and exactly what the influence is. There is not a good appreciation to this date exactly what the central mechanisms are, but it is clear that appropriate stimulation of the vagus can have efficacy, and the challenge for us as physiologists is to move forward and mechanistically assess what is actually going on in those centers and how we can mitigate that with the vagal stimulation.
Well, great. This has been a really great discussion concerning what I think is an important paper in the field. And clearly, this type of neuromodulation is going to go forward. There are many people looking at this now in all sorts of different ways. So I want to thank Jeff and David for their participation. And we'll turn it back to you, Kara.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circ podcast. For more podcasts, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.